Welcome to Strong Tower Radio. I'm your host, Tom Majeure, and we're on location in Everett, Michigan at the original Dulcimer Players Club. I have my co-host today is Brian Burchett. He's the president of ODCP. Again, that is the original Dulcimer Players Club. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you, Tom.
Brian, who do we have next?
Next, we have Marcia Kozlowski. I met Marcia a few years ago, I think over at Midland. We may have met before that, and I may not have remembered. But I thought it would be nice to bring Marcia on and talk about what role local Dulcimer clubs play. This original Dulcimer Players Club is a statewide club. We have hundreds of members, and it's not easy for us to all gather. But many of our members are also participants. They're members of a local organization, entirely separate from the ODPC. But it's a place where people connect and there's community. And Marcia, I just thought, when people get interested in making music with other people, the kind of experience that you have with your club is really important. So would you tell us about the club that you belong to, what's its name, where are you located, and then tell us a little bit about why do people like to be part of a local club? What does it add to their experience?
I am the music coordinator for a club called Silver Strings Dulcimer Society. Their home base is Livonia, Michigan, and it has been a club for 40 years and has waned and waxed in terms of membership. But our club actually increased in size and in spirit during COVID, which amazing. Was amazing and remarkable.
And why do you think that happened?
Well, clubs keep going because of the connection. There's a fellowship and there's a connection that music alone is just unique in providing. And when COVID hit, I thought, how are we going to stay connected? How are we going to not be isolated? And I started something called a Facebook Live Jam. I called it a Spirit Jam to keep the spirit of music alive. And it started out with 12 people, just to see if it would work. And pretty soon, other members found out about it and word of mouth. And by time we were done after 13 weeks, we had 300 people from across the country that felt part of this community. The next thing they wanted to do was to become a member, to feel connected musically by, I'm a member of Silver Strings. So they became members, and they became members because they came to a jam called the Spirit Jam. So we have members in Wisconsin, that there's a cluster in Missouri, there's a little small cluster in Kentucky, but the majority of them are in southeastern Michigan. And
are you still doing that online?
We do it not in the summer because I feel there's nothing more important than getting together face to face. When things started opening up, we started something called a pop-up jam. You know, Michigan's weather is unpredictable.
Yes, for sure.
So we would.
We've already been rained on while we've been recorded and.
So we would check the weather on Sunday and invite people to host a pop-up jam. I would send out a mass email. If you're available and you want to jam, we're meeting at this park on Wednesday at this time, or whatever the day was, which was predicated by the weather. And we would have small jams, 10 to 12 to maybe even 20. And we did that throughout the summer. And that, because that was a safe place to play music.
Let me ask this question, Brian. Maybe it's totally off base, but I almost hear that playing the Hammerwood dulcimer is often a community affair. Can you play it by your, is it ever a solo instrument?
People play as soloists, and when you come to our evening concerts, you'll see some people perform on stage as soloists, and some of them are very accomplished, and it sounds like three people are playing because they're embellishing with great skill. But I think that Marcia would probably agree, and I think most of the people who are here, they're here, would agree that playing music with other people is a way, even if the music is not complex, even if the music is simple, playing with other people makes it a rich experience. And there's something special about creating something in the moment with other people. And I think we just want to invite people to come and see and come and hear. And we think they're going to, when they hear it, when they participate, they're going to know what we're talking about.
It was almost providential. Somebody started playing the dulcimer in the background here. there are some instruments that are maybe it's a piano, is often a solo instrument, but I get the feeling that dulcimers players would prefer to play in groups.
It keeps you motivated, it helps expand you, because most dulcimers were learned not through music lessons with paper, it's by ear. And you sit and you find patterns on your instrument. So, okay, I'm stuck. I need a GPS. Well, the person next to you is Google dulcimer, and they'll say, go this route. This is your pattern. And, all right. And then you learn the pattern. And then the next tune comes, and, all right, I'm stuck. Let me show you how the pattern goes. And so the community helps each other expand musically and in the richness of music. And you learn, so you learn not just by yourself, but by hearing, by watching, by just absorbing it.
Talk about multisensory. You know, Brian, as you've been here with me through these various interviews, there's been reoccurring themes, you've heard it. Truisms that are held by multiple and many people about the dulcimer and the dulcimer experience, the jam sessions, and the festival.
It's not unusual that when people have a common experience, they might have a common language to describe that experience. So I think you're correct. Some people come here primarily to jam, and that's where they get the most enjoyment. Other folks come here and get great enjoyment out of taking the workshops and learning from people who can show them tricks, can show them techniques. And then we also attract people who are not musicians. We tend to joke that every hammer dulcimer player has a spouse or a partner who helps them carry their stuff. Because it's not a small instrument. And so we have many people who are here who the person they love plays music, but they themselves may be more of a spectator. And they enjoy...
Supportive.
They enjoy the evening concerts. They enjoy listening to the jams, even if they're not participating in the jams. And I think that is the kind of experience that folks will have. If you don't think you're going to be a player of an instrument, there's still a lot here for you. But you never know. Like if you pick up those hammers and you let somebody show you a tune, you might end up walking away with a dulcimer.
One of our neighbors along the campsite is not a musician, and her sister got her to come. This is her first time here. And she said, you know, I'm really not interested in the hammer dulcimer. But she went to the Bones workshop.
What's the Bones Workshop?
The Bones are, they were originally bones, but they're now wood sticks that you use with one hand and you make rhythm. It's a percussive instrument. And she took that class and she's ready to join the jam, just to try to play something rhythmically. And I thought, well, good, that's good. She said, I'm so glad that I came. So she'll never be a dulcimer player, but who knows what she will end up playing.
We love to play with people who play other instruments. We don't want to make it sound like it's only dulcimer.
Yeah.
We love our guitar players. We love our banjo players, our bones players.
Our fiddle players.
Fiddle players. Marcia, how did you become a dulcimer player? When did you pick it up?
My husband went turkey hunting and brought home a dulcimer.
Okay.
Well, did he get lost in the woods?
No, he stayed with a person who decided she couldn't play. So she sold him this dulcimer, and we...
Did he intend to learn it?
Yes, I did, and we found out, we ended up buying property near here, and we heard there was a festival. So I came without my dulcimer just to see what it was about, and because I had no case. It was just a dulcimer in a box. And I thought, all right, I could come and learn here. So I said, Terry, I got to get a case. So the vendor barn, I got a case. Next year, I was ready. And I overdid it. You know, I took so many workshops. But I learned that, okay, I can play a couple tunes. And I said, Terry, I need a wagon because now I got to get from one workshop to the other. So the next year I got a wagon. Then I found out, oh, there's more than one kind of hammers. So the next year I've got another hammers. And then I went along, and after 5 years, I thought, I need a better dulcimer. This one doesn't have enough notes. So I went to the vendor barn and went through and listened. The dulcimers speak to you. It's a heart connection. And everybody listens differently, and it, you know, different. They have different appeal to you. So I found one that spoke to me. It really made my heart sing, but it was expensive. And I thought, So I dragged my husband in there and I said, now Terry, if we ever had the money, this is the dulcimer I want. And he said, really? I said, yeah. I said, now I gotta go because I'm in the pre-show here. I gotta be there, you know. So I forgot about it. And he went up to the vendor, and the vendors are wonderful. And he said, I don't have the money with me, and my wife manages the checkbook, so I wanted to buy this for her as an anniversary present and surprise her. And she goes, okay. And he said, so I can't charge it because she manages the charge account. I can't write you a check because she does a checking account. So I will send you money every week until I get this paid, and in August you send it to my company and I will surprise her with this special dulcimer, which I still have. So he went to surprise me, and his plan was to switch it out, but it was too big for the case. So we went to the festival, Midland this one was, and we got home, and you know, my dulcimer was, I put it where I usually kept it to play, and I walked past that room for 4 days. Finally, he said, are you ever going to play your dulcimer? Because the new one was sitting there and I didn't see it. And I said, well, what does it matter to you? He goes, well, I want to hear you play. Well, I was totally clueless. So I thought, all right, after dinner, I'll go tune it if that'll make you happy. And he said, all right, I got to go water the grass. So I went in, and there was this beautiful instrument that I had really wanted, and he was outside the bay window watching me with great glee that I discovered it finally. He has the patience of Job. But that's my journey. It's been a journey. It's been a musical journey, and I've met so many people through the years. And then I found this club, and that keeps you going because everybody encourages each other. And I didn't know there was a club. And actually, there are probably at least 11 clubs or groups that play throughout Michigan.
And I think there used to be more. I think in recent years we've lost some of our local
clubs. We have.
Clubs. But local clubs are vital to keeping people connected to the instrument, to the tradition, and to their friends, so they play music together.
You know, I think that if I would assume that they can be reformed, many of them will, and they come back to the Everett Fun Fest here, and they say, oh, we need to do that again.
Yeah, and I think new clubs will form. I think there's a need, and people will find a way to create community.
And actually, tomorrow I'm leading a workshop about building community, specifically music communities, and how you do that. And there's a panel of women, all who have had success in starting new music communities. And they're from all different places. And I have been working on, in my club, revitalizing it because I could see it shrinking. And I thought, okay, we need to revitalize. And so we created some things that we've done. We go to libraries and just perform in the libraries because that's a community center now. And people who have been alone and isolated and they have an instrument that they put away in the closet or under their bed and it's, they get re-inspired to pull it out and come and play with somebody.
We talked about community on different times in our the pre-show and during the interview. Brian, kind of bring us home, kind of review the experiences that we've had here today and how people can reach out to the original Dulcimer Players Club and the Fun Fest in the future, or a local club that's around the state of Michigan.
You can always find the original Dulcimer Players Club online with a Google search. Our website is everdulcimerfest.org. We also have a Facebook group, which is very active. So if you're on Facebook and you search for Original Dulcimer Players Club in the Facebook groups area, you'll find us. And people share photos, people share where they're playing, people share tunes, they ask for help. It's very vibrant. I think if you're looking for a local club, again, they probably have a web page, and I would search for a local music club or a dulcimer club. But we can always help connect people. So if you can't find a club in your area, you can come to our website, you can fill out a contact form, and you can say, I'm looking to connect with people, and we'll help them find people in their area who like to play music, and maybe they'll start a brand new club through that.
Well, listeners, I have with me Keith Prairie, and he has the notoriety that he's come a long, long way. Where did you come from, Keith?
I live in Westbrook, Maine. It's a suburb of Portland, Maine, and it is somewhere around 14 hours from here. And I came through New York State, stayed in Ithaca, New York with some friends there on the way, and slept over. I had the good fortune to spend a day there with them, and I played music for them in the evening. Some of their friends came over. It was about 20 of them, and lovely time we had and exchanged music. And I also had a chance to hike in their woods and found some chanterelle mushrooms. So I was very pleased by that.
So, Keith, you drove about 13 hours.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to the Fun Fest before.
I have not. I've heard about it for years. I've been playing hammer dulcimer for 47, 48 years. And I have heard about it because a couple in Bar Harbor, where I went to school and started playing hammer dulcimer, they were from Michigan, and they had aspirations of coming back, but they had a music store in Bar Harbor, and they could never get away. So they ended up creating a festival in Bar Harbor for a few years that was about dulcimers, which was very nice, but I guess it was a lot of work, so they discontinued it after about 5 years.
So first of all, you played for your supper, it sounds like.
Uh-huh.
But have you ever been, what other festivals have you been to that are of note?
Well, in Maine, back in the 80s, there was the Down East Dulcimer Festival, and I went to that a couple of times. That was when I lived in Portland, so I was commuting up to that, but it was a lot of fun to get to that. And in the New England area, there's a thing called the Nutmeg Festival in Milford, Connecticut, and that happens in, usually it's the first or third week in October. And last year I couldn't make it because it conflicted with something of mine, and this year I hope to make it to that. So there's that one. Quite a few years ago I made it to the Augusta Heritage Festival down in West Virginia, and took a week-long workshop there. That was a lot of fun. Where else? I'd like to get to Black Mountain Festival because that's in Asheville where my dad lives, and it would be most convenient, but usually Black Mountain happens the same weekend as Nutmeg Festival, so.
What we're catching and what you're adding flavor and perspective is that there are multiple festivals across the country.
And of course there are ones that are geared specifically towards dulcimers, and there are other ones that have different flavors. There are a lot of different folk type festivals in Maine. There's a thing called the Down East Folk Festival, I think is what it's called, or DEFFA, D-E-F-F-A, Down East. I can't remember what it stands for.
Tell me, you've been here, this is on a Friday, you've been to workshops for 2 days?
Yep, I got here this past Saturday, and so I've enjoyed the jams, and been surprised at being able to marginally keep up with some of the people playing at the Squirrel's Nest.
Which is a group of very accomplished players, and they play fast.
They play fast, and they play lots of tunes that this part of the country, they play a bit different tunes than we play back in New England. So it's a leap to jump into that and try and keep up with them.
Well, and Keith, you brought up an important point that with the interview we had with Brian and some of the other people here, they indicated that there was regional differences. What did you experience at this festival that you haven't elsewhere?
That's a good question. I'm surprised at how I haven't been bitten by lots of mosquitoes here.
Okay. Well, that's a good thing.
That's a good positive thing, actually. It feels like people are very friendly. People are very open. You know, you can approach just about anybody here and start a conversation, and sometimes you end up talking with them for 15 or 20 minutes, and it's just a kind of a friendly sit-down kind of a feeling of people are open and ready to accept you.
So, Keith, most of our listeners are non-dulcimer players. What could you share with them about the dulcimer, the festivals? What words of advice do you have?
Well, I could go back to the story of what brought me into the dulcimer world, and it was I was the sound geek at College of the Atlantic, and so I was ending up setting up sound for a coffee house, and There was nothing special about it. It was just some folkies were coming to play music. And the first set was a fiddler and this gal who played some auto harp and this other thing that looked like a big box with lots of strings on it. Turned out it was a hammer dulcimer. Well, she played and with the fiddler, and they played a series of wonderful tunes. And that night I fell in love with the sound of the hammer dulcimer. I became infatuated enough, so back in those days there was no internet. I rode away to the Smithsonian and to a couple of record labels to find out as much as I could about hammer dulcimers, and ended up getting enough information so I thought I knew what I was doing, and the next summer I was building one.
Wow.
And it was an experience. I tooled around. At the time, my folks were living in Oklahoma, so I went to their house for the summer and was there, and went around and found a place where I could get some parts out of an old piano and pins from an old piano, and ordered a tuning wrench and figured out where I could source some strings and threw something together that it actually sounded pretty okay. But I built it out of oak, which is not a wood you really would want to build an instrument out of. It is a mercurial wood that takes on the humidity around it and swells up and dries out and swells up and dries out. So it was a miserable instrument to keep in tune. But it got me into this world, and I was quite happy with it for a couple of years. But it's been a love affair for with this kind of music. It was, you know, I was always attracted to folk music and had played guitar up until then, but this particular instrument has driven me crazy, I would say.
In a good sense.
In a good sense, yes. And I can remember some housemates in college feeling a little bit annoyed at it and telling me that if they ever hear the Irish washerwoman again, they will throw that dulcimer through the window.
Well, Keith, it's been a pleasure talking to you. And you know, you're unbeknownst, we did this recording totally isolated from all the other recordings, but your story rings true with many, many of the experiences of people mm-hmm. we've met here mm-hmm. at the Fun Fest here in Everett, yeah. Michigan. In times past, a person would, strangers would pull out a fiddle or some sort of instrument, and community would, friendships would be bonded within mm-hmm. minutes and hours.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still there.
It is. It is.
Thanks again.
Sure.
You know, Brian, it's just been, this has exceeded my expectations. You've been a wonderful co-host, and to be here on the grounds, thank you for the hospitality.
We want to be a family-friendly community. We want people to come and see what we have and to join us.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Brian. Thank you so much, Marcia, and every person who has been a part of this interview today. And until next time, I'm your host, Tom Majeure, for Strong Tower Radio. God bless. Bye now.